Hello, my name is Dr. Latasha Schrader. I am a student advocate, school administrator, editor, and owner of Tempo Editing. I am pleased to welcome our guest, Dr. Will Eddy, to the podcast. Dr. Will Eddy, PhD, is a U.S. federal government acquisitions and contracts program manager with over 20 years of public service experience in various federal government agencies such as the U.S. Department of Health, National Institutes of Health, U.S. Food and Drug Administration, U.S. Department of Homeland Security, and U.S. Department of Defense. Dr. Eddy holds a Bachelor of Science in Public Health, a Master of Science in Management and Business Administration, MSM, MBA dual degrees, and a PhD in Organizational Management and Leadership earned in May 2020. The title of his dissertation is A Case Study of Women and Ethnic Minority Managers Leadership Advancement in General Schedule 13 to 15 Pay Scale in the United States of America Federal Government Civil Service. The theoretical lenses of Dr. Eddy's dissertation are human capital, social capital, and supervisor-supervisee relationships. The study was on the roles of supervisor, subordinate relationship, and intersectionality of human capital and social capital on leadership advancement of women and minorities in U.S. federal government civil services. Dr. Eddy also holds several postgraduate certifications, organizational leadership, human resources management, diversity, equity, and inclusion in the workplace, acquisitions and contract management, teaching with technology, and long distance running co-certification. He is also a published author, mentor, and certified endurance running coach. His publications include personal book publication, Journey from Homelessness to Finished, One Bible Verse, and Run at a Time, which can be found on Amazon. A Case Study of Women and Ethnic Minority Managers Leadership Advancement in General Schedule 13 to 15 Pay Scale within the United States of America Federal Government Civil Service. Succession Planning and Cultural Intelligence. And finally, Federal Senior Executive Service, SES, and African American Men and Women. Let's get started. Please tell us a bit about the case study methodology.
So the case study methodology can be either quantitative or qualitative study. And in layman's terms, quantitative is the numeric number of occurrences that something happened. The qualitative is more of the story behind the numbers itself. And in my case, I did qualitative, so I wanted to know the reasons, the stories behind the numbers. And the numbers meaning in the U.S. specifically, minorities and women have been underrepresented in top leadership roles. For example, the U.S. was founded in 1776, and up until the year 2022, the U.S. has not had one female president. Meanwhile, other developing countries and other developed countries have had women prime ministers as well as women presidents. So I wondered, what is the contributing factors that either prevent women and ethnic minorities from being in those top leadership roles in the government? And I chose the federal government because I have a career in the federal government over 20 years. And when I was receiving my 10-year award, I noticed there were about 100 of us on the stage. However, I was only one of four men. And of those four men, one of them was the top leader in the agency. And the agency has over 10,000 employees. So that left about 96 women in the pool,
right,
with only a very small number of men, four men. So I wonder why the top leaders were often men when the pipeline itself was oversaturated with women.
Right.
So that piqued my interest to do the study on women and ethnic minorities. And I chose the lens of human capital, which is credentials like your degrees, your certifications, and things of that nature. And then social capital, as you might have heard over the years, some people believe that it's not what you know, it's who you know. So I wanted to find out the extent to which who you know for women and ethnic minorities contributes to the leadership advancement. And then third, I wanted to know the the role that the relationship between a supervisor and supervisee play in leadership advancement. And one of the reasons for that third lens was because in the U.S. federal government, in order to grow to any promotion or leadership role, the supervisor has to endorse you. And the endorsement is not simply word or a written letter. They have to advocate for you in, formally and informally in many settings. My study specifically had 38 women and 10 men. Of the 38 women, 28 of the women were African-American. And of the men, 10 were African-American men. What I noticed in my study, based on the results of the study, was that those who were Caucasian or white had a bachelor's degree for the payroll, the specific payroll, years 13 through 15. To put it into a numeric value, those are leaders in the U.S. federal government who make $100,000 to $200,000.
Yeah. That's a really very, very large sample. I'm glad you were able to get information from all of those sources, but that I'm sure that took time and a lot of effort.
It absolutely did. Initially, I was at the brink of giving up after 6 months of trying to reach so many different people and not really having any, it wasn't coming to fruition. And then once it came to fruition, it was a snowball effect, meaning it wasn't random. So once I interviewed five or more people, they then introduced me to other people to interview. And from that, then other people introduced me to either people or resources to tap into to try to gain access to individuals to interview who met those criteria. Yeah. And the criteria was they had to be in the U.S. federal government. They had to be in a specific pay scale, 100 to 200K. And what I found out was that the Caucasian had bachelor's degree to get to that level. Those who were African-American women felt that they would not get the chance to be at those levels if they didn't have a master's degree. So they had master's degrees and multiple certifications. For those who were African-American men, they felt that they wouldn't even get a chance at all, because for human resources, compliances, having a black woman fulfills the role of having somebody who's black and someone who's woman. So the role of hiring an African-American man was not a high priority because they are already a man. And if you can fulfill those two boxes with a woman, why hire a man? So in a lot of places, there aren't a lot of men in those offices. And from my experience in 20 plus years, most of my peers are usually women.
Yeah, I never thought about the black female being like a double minority, and that's checking boxes. That's unfortunate, but I guess it's not surprising. Which writing resources do you recommend for those currently writing their dissertation?
The primary resource for writing is creating a schedule. There are a lot of research, there are a lot of articles out there, there are a lot of books on how to write, but the most important thing is create a schedule. Make sure the schedule is accessible to you wherever you are, whether you are at work, whether you're at home, or if you are taking public transportation, that it's with you. And once you create that, stick to that schedule. No matter where you are, there's something you could be doing. During my dissertation, I often took the train to work. So even though I couldn't really write on the train, I would jot down notes and articles that I downloaded on a PDF to my phone.
Yes.
Or my iPad, and I would take those notes. I'll write the notes down while I was on the train, and later on in the evening, I will elaborate more on those notes. So the reason why I mentioned that is, no matter where you are, there's always something that you can capitalize on for your writing. So once you actually have the article, research the articles, have them handy, make sure that they're accessible to you no matter where you are, taking notes on them, and then actually doing the writing. And then for your writing itself, don't worry too much about making it perfect. The first thing is just to make sure you just write it down.
Yes.
And once you write it down, you can edit it as many times as you want to ensure that it meets, it meets the standards that is required for your study and for your dissertation chair and committee.
Yeah, definitely get creative and think outside of the box. There's a lot of quote unquote downtime that you could use to write. For instance, I would sometimes write at like one of my kids' practices, or, you know, at least look for articles. Or sometimes if I let my husband drive, if we had, you know, a little extended drive, and do a little bit of work during that time, just wherever you can carve out a little bit of time. Eventually those little half hours and hours add up to a product.
Absolutely. And sometimes I even record myself and I listen to my recorded notes while I was on the train. And in addition to listening to it on the train, sometimes I also get, sometimes motivation can be low, but sometimes while I'm on the train writing and notating my PDF files, I get inspiration from strangers. So a couple of times that really stood out to me, I was tired and there were times when I was dozing off, and then I'll catch myself and start editing again. And a lady reached out to me, and she must have read the title of my dissertation, and she could relate to it. And I didn't know she was a professor. And she was like, thank you for what you're doing. Keep doing it. I know you're tired, but keep doing it. The finish is in sight.
That's awesome. So,
apparently, she had been watching it because we had similar schedules.
Yes.
And seeing how much I struggle between sleeping, falling asleep, because this is after an 8-hour workday, or on my way to an 8-hour workday, on my way back from an 8-hour workday, and consistently seeing me working on something and pulling out my book and my iPad and things of that nature. So you never know where inspiration or motivation will come from, as well as capitalizing on downtime. Even if you're like a doctor's office, maybe you're waiting for 15, 20 minutes, you could be editing or doing some notes, not anything major during those short times, but just short notes or highlighting some of the.
So yeah, those little 15 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes add up. So for sure, just wherever you can find a few minutes, take that time to do something productive. You'll thank yourself later.
Absolutely.
So which writing resources do you recommend for those currently writing their dissertation?
Creswell is a great resource. It breaks down the different elements and the requirements for each different methodology, whether it's quantitative or qualitative or mixed methods. And if you can get the most current edition, that would be better. He has multiple editions of his quantitative, qualitative, research methodology books.
Yeah, and I find that each edition has some additional useful information for the reader. So make sure you get that most recent version. It was really helpful for me when I did my mixed methods, specifically on the qualitative portion. So definitely a good resource for that. What did you do to overcome writer's block?
One of the things, I did several things to overcome writer's block. One of them was I scheduled time to meet with friends. I scheduled time to go for walks. I scheduled time to take myself to a concert, take myself out to eat, take myself to movies, just different things to break the monotony of constantly being in the library and coffee shops and Panera Bread or Starbucks, anywhere where I can find Wi-Fi to write. So those things help to take me away from that and give me a fresh eyes. And those fresh eyes often, there are sometimes when I'm maybe doing a 6 or 10 hour writing block, towards the end, you're fatigued. You're still writing, but you're fatigued.
Yes.
And after meeting with friends and family and maybe another day going back to them, I'm able to see things that I didn't catch or make things more efficient or make things more clear or clearer than they were before. But each process is important. So obviously the initial process of just writing, the main thing is just getting words on paper.
Absolutely.
And then you can go through different iterations of edits in order to meet to take it to the standards that is acceptable for your university, for approval from your dissertation chair and dissertation members, or any other special interest group that has to read it for approval for the different phases.
Absolutely, yes. I know, and after a while you get so familiar with your content, when you're reading it, you miss just the little what's the word I'm looking for, like typos, or maybe, you know, homophones, you use T-H-E-N rather than T-H-A-N, just little things like that.
Absolutely.
You're not really...
And other nuances that may be clear to you because you're so familiar with yes. the topic that you might need to break down to someone who is not familiar with the topic.
Yes, for sure. So definitely come back with fresh eyes. I know after each, you know, if I did a good chunk, you know, 3 or 4 pages, I would leave it alone for a few days and then come back to it so I could just look at it again. How would you describe your dissertation journey in one word, and why did you choose that word?
I would describe my dissertation journey as a marathon. And the reason why is, on one hand, if you have not ran a marathon, you do not know the different phases that your body goes through to complete a marathon. And those phases are very unique. The reason for the PhD being a marathon is because it's very unique and different from other academic pursuits. In a bachelor's degree or Bachelor of Arts or Bachelor of Science, just any college degree, often the requirement is that you complete all the courses and then you graduate with your degree. Similarly, many master's programs are also you finish all your coursework, you make your capstone, and then you graduate. So often you're able to know, if you ask someone who's a senior or a junior, they're able to tell you the year that they're going to graduate well in advance. For doctoral studies, and specifically a PhD, it's not unusual to ask a PhD student, when are you graduating? And they may say, I don't know.
Yes.
And the reason is because there's so many variables and factors that go into the actual date. So in addition to finishing coursework, there's other stages that one has to go through. Often after coursework, you have to prepare for and take comprehensive exams, which are very similar to standardized tests, in which you have allocated time to answer specific questions. And those questions are scored. And if you fail the first time, you have one more opportunity to take it again.
Yes.
And the second time, if you succeed, then you move on to proposal. If you do not succeed, you are automatically kicked out of the program. If you join another program often or go to another school, often you have to start all over from coursework again, and then
yes.
going through the process. So once you finish the comprehensive exam, then you start writing for your actual proposal. And the proposal is very similar to the actual dissertation. It's a plan of what you're actually trying to study.
Mm-hmm.
It has 3 chapters. So those have to be approved, and you have to actually defend it. So you can defend it and fail and have to start all over. Or you can defend it successfully, then you move into Institutional Review Board, which is an entity that approves your research study.
Right.
So once the IRB actually approves your research study, it's at that time that you can actually begin your actual research itself, which is the chapter 4 of many dissertation studies.
Yes.
Once you actually begin the research itself, there are specific methodology that has to be used, and Creswell has a very good breakdown of those things, from the actual data collection itself to how you store the data, to the confidentiality of the data, and then to the analysis of the data. And the analysis of the data can depend on the amount of themes you have. It can be a very prolonged time period. For me, it took me a year to a year and a half to finalize between collecting data and successfully defending my dissertation because of the amount of data that I had and the different themes.
Yeah.
Some themes I had to combine with other larger themes. So that process is it's very rich and it's very rewarding, but it's time consuming.
It definitely is. Yeah, it took me about 10 months to finish the qualitative portion of my study, but it is a richer study. And before I entered the doctoral program, I didn't understand. Like, I had a couple friends that were, I would ask, like, when are you going to finish? And they would say, I don't know. I didn't understand. Like, in your bachelor's and your undergrad, there's a prescribed, you know, number of credits that you need, and you basically just take the courses in your doctoral program. Once you get to the dissertation phase, it's kind of self-driven as far as your timeline. So there is a difference.
Correct. And it's very independent.
Yes, very, very much so. So what are you reading right now, if anything?
So this is going to be a shameless plug. So one of the books I'm reading right now is my own book that is available on Amazon, which is titled Unbelievable, Journey from Homelessness to Finished. And finished is spelled P-H-I-I-S-D-E-D. Play on words to PhD, one Bible verse and one at a time. And for me personally, my faith helps center me throughout the journey. And running was a resource that I used to manage the stress of the doctoral program. So that's one of the books I'm reading. The second book I'm reading now is called The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks. The reason why they chose that, and Henrietta Lacks is an African-American woman that was born in Virginia. And she moved back and forth between Virginia and Baltimore because she had cancer after her fifth child at the age of 35, and she was being treated at Hopkins. So she moved back and forth between Virginia and Baltimore in order to attend different treatments at Johns Hopkins University, which is located in Baltimore, Maryland. And one of the things that, the two main things that stood out about her, one thing is her life exposes the medical practice of collecting samples without knowledge and consent of African Americans. And that has been going on for a long time. Her samples were collected without her knowledge and without her consent. And another thing that stood out is that prior to her cells, they were collecting cells from different individuals, but they were not living beyond a specific time. Within a month, they would die. So her cells were the first to last longer than a month. They lasted from the 1930s up until the present year, 2022. And they were shipped from Baltimore to all over the United States and outside of the United States. It became they called it the HeLa cells. And it became the primary cells that were used in the United States and internationally to study different diseases. Through her cells, billions were made, but her family never received any financial benefit from those HeLa cells. And till this day in biology, it's still the primary cells that people refer to in terms of breakthrough in research, which are the HeLa cells coming from an African-American woman. And often they don't even talk about her identity. It's just she's a Black woman. That's the most that most people know. Wow. Until a Jewish lady made it her study. I'm not sure if it was a master's study or a doctoral study. She made it her study to review who she is as an individual, not just herself. And she uncovered the story that she reported in her book. And she wrote the book from a perspective of how those individuals speak, because she was not very educated, and neither were her family. So the words that were used may not be correct grammar and things of that nature, because she wanted to make sure she maintained the authenticity.
Yes.
Of the individuals that she interviewed.
Wow, that is very interesting. I'm going to put that on my list because that sounds like an amazing story. It's unfortunate that, you know, she didn't get the credit that she deserves. So is there anything else you would like to share about your experience with academic writing before I let you go?
One of the main things that I want to share with people is often people who pursue a PhD, sometimes they have the desire to pursue a PhD long before they do. So whenever you have that desire, if it's in your heart, in your spirit, anyone can do it. But know that it's going to be an arduous journey. It's going to change you. It's going to frustrate you. However, it's worth it in the long run.
Yes.
You just have to stick with it. Don't compare yourself to when other people, whether in your family or friends or relatives or colleagues, finish their doctoral journey, because everyone have their own timeline and everyone finish at different times. The important thing is finishing and finding a support group. They don't have to be in your school. They don't even have to be people that you know. When I was going through my process, I found support groups on through social media, on Twitter, on Facebook, on LinkedIn, just different individuals that we would set a schedule to hold each other accountable for writing, and just through emails and texts. So many of my accountability partners I never saw in real life, but we'll log on to the computer and start writing at a specific time on a weekly basis. And that helped, because then you don't feel like you're just by yourself, just
yes,
the work grinding, just
yes,
just working and working by yourself. So just hearing other people's voices who are doing the same things and having some of the same challenges is very instrumental. In addition, I attended and presented at different academic conferences, and I also attended conferences that are specifically for African American and Hispanics for attrition to help counteract attrition rates, because they found that African Americans and Hispanics have a higher attrition rate in a doctoral program than any other groups. So those, for me, they happen in the summer. They call it Summer Success Institute. And they pretty much kind of hype us up. It's like having the best friend who just kind of hype you up to accomplish your goal. So they have different doctoral students come and speak to current students, as well as, you know, leaders from different industries in academia, outside of academia. And those things really help to see other people who look like you,
yes,
who have gone through that process, understand the process, and inspiring you to finish your own journey. Because it's a very unique journey. And I believe in 2022, the amount of individuals with PhD or doctoral degrees is still under 5%.
Wow.
So it's still a very low number. Mm-hmm. It's very possible that you may have family members who just don't understand the process,
right,
of what they're going through. Maybe it's Thanksgiving or Christmas, and they may ask you, when are you going to be finished? And you're like,
right,
I don't know.
Yes, I've definitely experienced that. I would love to have been a part of those conferences. You probably got some good networking done too while you were there. That's awesome.
Absolutely, I did. It was very helpful. And I attended that Summer Success Institute, I think, for 6 years.
Wow. And Dr. Eddy brings up a good point. Like, you're definitely going to experience a very, very different emotions at different times in your process. Just keep going. You'll get there. So, Dr. Eddy, thank you so much for taking the time. You have been very patient with me getting this episode recorded and being so open to sharing your dissertation journey.
The pleasure is mine. I'm happy to help other people as I've gained and benefited from other resources as well. So I hope this resource help others.
Thank you, listeners. I'd like to thank you for taking the time to listen. We all know time is priceless. Information about my editing services can be found at tempoediting.com. That's tempoediting.com. Last, if you have enjoyed this podcast, please follow and share it with a fellow scholar.